And welcome to Room Escape Divas. We are on episode 10.
This room, it starts in a cell. I'm stuck with randoms, oh well. How will we do? I can't tell. But now they're in my way. And here's a clue that they missed. They hinder more than assist. I wasn't looking for this. And now they're in my way. They're slowly going bossy. And they're scolding. Kept clues they're withholding. Looks like there'll be no escaping. Hey, I just met you. And called me crazy. You found a number. So solve it maybe. Hey, I could be right. It's the escape key. Please try the number. And solve it maybe. Hey, I just met you. And called me crazy. You found a number. So solve it maybe. If we could get along, we'll escape free. So use that number. And solve it maybe.
In today's episode, we are going to discuss a number of things. Mostly, we got some questions on Twitter and on the Facebook Enthusiast group. Things to discuss, things to debate, and we are going to bring up, for example, what do you remember, Man Pans?
Throw me under the bus right away, right?
Yeah.
Well, first there was the Gen 1 versus Gen 2 topic. Yeah. Someone asked about that, and that is something we wanted to talk about. I think we touched on it in earlier episodes, but we haven't really delved into it in depth.
I don't think we've described it as in, like, given it a definition.
Right. Yeah. Then there was, but I think we've already talked about that one. Then there was the...
The future of escape rooms.
Yes, that's the big one, actually. That is a question that has been on almost every enthusiast's mind and has been discussed tirelessly. And so, of course, we want to talk about it, too.
And then also maybe touch on, although you did say we did talk about it, shared versus private rooms.
We did talk about it because...
A lot? Did we talk a lot about it?
Yeah, it was spurred by Amanda Harris.
Then we don't have to talk about it at all. What do you mean it's spurred by Amanda Harris? She hasn't been on.
No, but we had the visit with her and she was talking about... You know, she came here and she didn't, you know, like the fact... There was almost all the rooms here were private as opposed to in the States where a lot of them are on the ticket system. So we talked a lot about ticket system versus... It was on our Ottawa trip.
Oh,
that's what it was.
Was it?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
There you go. So if anybody's interested in that...
It was one of the sleep-deprived car conversations.
You can listen on the... That's episode 2.
That is.
Trip to Ottawa.
Oh, can I do a quick disclaimer?
Sure.
Okay.
Disclaimer!
Okay.
Man Pans has a disclaimer.
I do have a disclaimer.
She has a disclaimer.
Just as an aside, just as a quick...
This is just for Man Pans, though.
No, not for anybody else here. No.
She's just disclaiming herself.
No, I'm saying that...
So you're trying to talk for us?
No.
Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, I am, actually.
Escape room drama happening right on the Divas. Episode 10, special episode.
Oh, that's
episode
right.
10,
on episode
the band's
10.
Breaking up.
Yeah. That's exciting.
It is exciting.
We've lasted for 10 episodes.
10 weeks we've been doing this.
And we still have lots of... The cool thing is we have a lot of other interviews planned. We have so many people that we want to bring on, so it's not like we're going to die out anytime soon, so this is exciting.
We have plans.
We do have plans.
Wow.
And we're still the only escape room podcast other than the Really Fun's podcast, but they haven't put anything out. Guys, put some stuff out. We miss you.
We like you.
Not Mike, though.
Mike's like stoically sitting there.
Hey guys, I told you already, I got a headache. It's nothing on these guys. I like Escape from Reality. They're really informative.
It's called Escape from Reality.
I remember the name.
I'm sorry. I suck.
So going back to it, as a quick disclaimer, we have done... Errol has done a little bit of research, but a lot of what we're going to be discussing today is based on our own opinions. Obviously won't have absolutely all the information to draw from if there are any scholarly papers out there that discuss this stuff.
There aren't any. We looked.
Yeah, we did try, but there's not a lot of escape stuff out there. But if we say something and you have other information on it, we're happy to hear it. So if you
disagree, we'd even like to hear it even more.
Exactly, yeah.
You can email Man Pans. She loves debating this stuff. Just call her out on the Facebook group.
Oh, just that's not a private email to RuneScape.
Yeah, no. Just call her out and just say, I think Manda was wrong when she said this.
Okay.
On the podcast.
Even if it was you that said it?
Even if it was me that said it. Okay. As long as everybody knows it's you.
Are you just going to try and start an I Hate Manda group? No. Is that what this is?
I don't have to start
that.
It's
like, that. How about we... You know...
start it when you start calling people out.
Only the cheaters. Only the cheaters.
Wait, so you're not trying to be the fifth petal, is that again?
Oh, I'm my own petal, that's right.
Right. No, that's what it was.
I'm a special petal.
You want to start with Gen 1 and Gen 2?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's start with Gen 1 and Gen 2, because that actually leads naturally into the what's the future of escape rooms. So, you see a lot of those terms being thrown around lately, like, this is a Gen 1 room, this is a Gen 2 room.
Stands for Generation 1 and Generation 2.
Would you like to elaborate on Generation 1, Aaron?
Well, when you said Gen 1, I actually wasn't paying attention, so I thought you were talking about Jenny or somebody. So
okay.
I was, yeah, so it's good that you... I just want to, in case nobody knows what Gen 1 means.
Yeah.
Generation 1. Rooms, from the very beginning, that first came out, and we were all so excited about them. I think Michael should talk about Generation 1 rooms, because he and Ruby started before we started, and just took them all in.
Yeah, well, Generation 1 rooms are generally rooms that they won't have tech. They'll be a standard, either office or pretty well-decorated room that has your standard puzzles.
Lockboxes, physical lockboxes, physical locks. Padlocks.
So a Generation 1 room almost sometimes is like a single room.
Yes.
Not all the time, but it started off as a single room. You might have these wooden boxes with a physical lock on it. It might have 3 digits on it, 4 if you're lucky. And they'd just be scattered about the room, and there'd be a light theme pasted on. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to search through the room to find clues to open up multiple lock boxes.
Yep. And it's almost like... When I did the one generation, one room, like the first scrap room, what is it called? The mysterious room?
Escape from the mysterious room.
Escape from the mysterious room. It was the closest I saw to back when I played the old escape room on the computer, like escape the room on the computer. That was the closest I saw to like it just being taken directly from those computer games and being put into real life. Because it was often those games I played were little flash games in an office or a bedroom. And it was much the same types of puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And a good chance if you've played at least 5 to 10 escape rooms, you have done at least a handful of Generation 1 rooms. Because when rooms start out, especially in smaller towns, they will be predominantly Generation 1 rooms.
And a Generation 1 room isn't bad. It was new for its time. And, you know, it was very easy to set up. And a lot of people loved it, right? Because it was the first time we may have done a room, and we had to search around for keys in the dark with a bad flashlight. It was amazing.
It was just exhilarating.
It was.
And blacklight was cool.
Blacklight was cool. Yeah.
Not to be fair, blacklight for people who've never seen it now is still cool.
True.
Even searching is cool. But now with Generation 2, and Generation 2 probably spans a number of different rooms, and there's obviously not a hard delineation between 1 and 2. It can, like, span.
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to say there's some fine line, then, you know, you've switched over to Generation 2 from Generation 1. But Generation 2 kind of amps up the immersion and the decor, trying to include more almost movie or theme park style backgrounds and theme park style props and everything like that. And they try to have more immersion in regards to story. Maybe not even so. Not really. They don't really try it. They have a little bit more story, but it's still kind of...
The immersion's mostly in the set,
yes.
I would say.
Yes. But the puzzles tend to be a little bit better, too.
The puzzles tend to make more sense to the theme.
Yeah.
It's not just sort of tacked on, like... Here's a Sudoku for no reason, and in this, I don't know, temple. I'm just making it up.
Yeah. And there also tends to be more tech and less lock blocks. There tends to be less lock boxes. I can't say this word anymore. It's like once,
say it 10 times fast.
Yeah, right? It's like once I could say Bananarama fine, and then for some strange reason I couldn't anymore. And the more I thought about it, the less I could say that band's name. And it just drove me batty. It's like February as well. And Drawer. I can't do that
Drawer?
One.
Drawer? Drawer?
I'm having problems, Drawer. All sorts of problems today.
Poor
about
Errol.
Speaking, yeah.
So what are some of, I guess, because a lot of people praise Gen 2 rooms and that. What are some of the cons? Are there any cons of Gen 2 rooms?
Tech that breaks.
Tech that breaks.
Because, yeah, when you put the dependency on tech, if it doesn't work, then that kind of ruins whatever aspect that it was. And tech, it could be in an immersive point of view, whether it's opening a reveal to a secret passage that you didn't expect, or it could be part of a puzzle. And if that puzzle's not working, you have the right answer, but the tech's malfunctioning, that's a big downer.
Mm-hmm. And we've definitely been through that.
Yep. Many times.
But at the same time, you can have a, like, as I said before, it's hard to make these delineations, because I've been in a room with tons of tech, but absolutely no set decor at all, and it was an awful puzzles, and it was horrible. And even though it might be multiple rooms, I wouldn't really throw that up into Gen 2, because it doesn't reach the same quality as some of the better Generation 2 rooms out there. Or maybe not, I don't know.
I don't know, I was going to ask, are there any Generation 2 rooms that don't have tech that you would classify as Gen 2 rooms?
Maybe Escape from the Six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's Escape not really from that much tech in Escape from the Six.
Yeah, no, it's all manual, yeah.
But I would say that's Generation 2, especially Firefighter's Room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of Gen 1, Gen 2, I remember when we were starting out with Gen 1, when we first encountered our very first kind of tech-heavy room, I guess you could classify it as a 1.5 to a 2. there are certain regions in Toronto that went heavy in tech, and they weren't necessarily good.
You mean like Scarborough?
Yeah, Scarborough and parts of Markham. I guess I could generalize and say a lot of them were Asian-owned, because they were taking these concepts from Asia where they had all this tech that they brought over, where they would buy from Taobao.com, which is like the equivalent of Amazon.com.
When here. I first read your site, and there was all sorts of talk about Taobao.com, and it was my first introduction to it. I'm going, what is this? What's he talking about? I gotta go look this up, because, you know, I read later on reviews. It was all bought from Taobao. What's Taobao? And I had to go back. Oh, and that's the funny thing about reviewing, you know, you lay down the terminology like Gen 1 and Gen 2, and then just hopefully everybody knows what you're talking about, because you don't want to explain it again the 7th or 8th review later on down. But anyway, sorry, I'm interrupting your talk.
The Taobao thing actually came from my brother-in-law, who's from Beijing, and he's the one who said, oh yeah, you could just buy this off Taobao. And I'm like, okay. So I actually went on Taobao, and I'm like, holy crap, you can find lasers. Like, you can buy a set of lasers for
you
maybe...
You mean the green ones?
The green ones.
Take your eye out?
Exactly.
Wow.
The ones with the long disclaimer on them. You know, wow. It's like those American health commercials, like, you know, two people sitting on the beach and everything, and then it's like, may cause these side effects, and it scrolls through
it's
all
like
the...
internal bleeding.
Blindness.
So... you might not have this in the States, for anybody that's listening, but we have green lasers here. The majority of the lasers that are safe are red lasers.
Yep.
You would think those would be the bad lasers, since they're red
and
Sith related. But no, it's the green lasers that are super powerful.
Yeah. And
you stare, you point it at somebody's retina, then that's it for that poor guy.
Actually, I was told... Sorry.
No, that was just me gasping. That's all. I was just taken aback, like... I didn't actually know this.
Yeah. Don't stare into those
Do
lasers.
Not look into them.
Yeah. I was told recently that the green lasers can be safe. It just depends on the filter on the front.
True.
The most of them that are coming from China don't have that filter, which is why, you know, Asian places don't look at them lasers.
You think of safety, you don't think China first. Sorry if that sounds racist, but it's a little bit true.
Racist.
Now, the sad thing about these Generation 1.5 rooms, we're finding that a lot of them, even though they had a lot of tech, they didn't have a lot of immersion. And sadly, a lot of them have been closing in the last year, 6 months to a year. So,
well, not so much they didn't even have a lot of immersion. They had a lot of tech, but it looked like, the worst ones I've seen looked like they were still in beta test, you know? It's like, okay, let's just take this wood block, draw on it with a crayon, and then you just have to put it over there. Yay, it works!
Yeah.
What's on tech? Yeah, but it looks like crap.
Right.
Why does it look like, you know, I made it at the, in the back of my shop? I don't have a shop. I can't do anything with my hands. But still.
So do you think that, like, Gen 2 games are more along the lines of they follow, like, the Scott Nicholson theory of ask why more?
No.
Like, okay, I'm just...
I'm not trying to say that,
never mind,
know.
Forget it. Let's just forget I said that.
Oh, no, I think that's a good thing to talk about.
That's a good point.
Because you may have great sets, but that doesn't mean that the puzzles are going to be great. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean that you're the person who designed the puzzles is also someone that understands how to have a great set of puzzles immersed within the room in the game. So definitely, just because you have a Gen 2 room with it and it looks great, the puzzles might be awful.
I feel like Generation 1 gets a lot of flack that it shouldn't. Like, whenever somebody comes back from a room they didn't like, a lot of the, you know, a big negative comment that they'll have is like, oh, so Generation 1. And I don't think that necessarily has to mean that Generation 1 is bad. It just means that it's, I guess, behind the market now, or that it, you know, it's just an example of a bad Generation 1 room. I'm not sure.
And if you also want to think about it in value for cost, like, here, the cheapest escape room we have here is Escape It. And it's Generation 1. You're basically thrown into a room. You have to use your imagination more when they say that it's a dungeon.
Right. And, you know. As you are in the plywood bar dungeon or something like that, yeah.
But it's crazy cheap. And if all you want to do really is just work on puzzles in this room and work, you know, find and search things and then get out, that is all you might really want to do. And it's cheap and it's good and you can go. Mm-hmm. And value-wise, it's great, you know? You don't have to worry about, you know, you get what you pay for. And some people might like that. But if you went into the exact same room and paid $30 for it,
double the price,
which is the going rate for some of the... Not really. The more expensive rooms that do that look awesome. They look amazing. And compared to that, you would feel completely ripped off if you paid that much money. If you paid $30 for a Generation 1 room.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And again, Generation 2 rooms 2 doesn't have to have a lot of tech.
I was going to ask that next.
I don't think so. If the immersion is done really well, and if it's, you know, if they didn't just, if they don't have locks strewn around the room.
Well, I think in terms of Gen 2 rooms, they try to do something more custom with every room. Like, they don't try to just buy IKEA furniture to fill the space or to fill a desk. They may think of something more specialized, or they'll go to flea markets and buy something that's more authentic to fit the theming of the room.
Yeah, and as much as we say, like, storyline still isn't as important, at least in Ontario or southwestern Ontario, it is, you know, designers and owners are thinking more now about what has to go to a room and how the puzzles will relate to that theme.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Now, if you want to make a Generation 1 room and you buy IKEA furniture, remove all the letters and the number stickers.
Please do, yes.
You know, all the labels.
All the labels.
I don't know why you keep those there, because they're letters, single ones.
And red herring!
Now, to be fair, I don't think I've ever been fooled by that, but every time I see it, I think to myself, somebody would get confused by that. Why do you have H right here, and then another one that's J, you know? It's like,
Not even that. I think we've played with randoms where they were newbies, and then on furniture that they've bought from, I guess, either flea market or something, something was written on it. So they'll be like, oh, look, this has to be a clue. And it's like, no.
The worst is actually when people buy those cheap boxes from the dollar store that might have, like, you know, a picture of Paris on the front of it.
Yeah. And it has a phrase.
It has a phrase on it, and you're just like, oh! And now I just take those with a grain of salt.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The number of times somebody said, it says something on this box! Yeah, it came that way. No, but it's in rhyme! Yeah, I know, it came that way. But it's about Paris! Do we need anything? No! We don't need anything about Paris!
But then later on in the room, when you're, like, stuck on a puzzle or something, suddenly your mind starts wandering back to that stupid Paris box. Like, maybe Maybe it did. I don't know. Okay, let's just analyze all the letters in this poem, shall we? And because we have no other options at this point.
Although we give all the reading stuff to you, Manda. Thank you. Here's a journal. Manda will read it. And then you'll go straight through it. Guys, guys! No, we solved the puzzle already. But there's a whole story!
Yeah!
That is very true.
So there's, Gen 1, Gen 2. I can't remember the Facebook post, but somebody started talking about, is there a Generation 3 room now? Or is it still evolving?
No, so like David, Room Escape Artist, interviewed Sean of EscapeGames.ca talking about Gen 3 and Gen 4. And he was mostly talking about technology. So mm-hmm. he was talking more about Generation 3 technology and Generation 4 technology. And how that might affect escape rooms.
Okay.
So not so much the next generation of escape rooms of either 3 or 4. Because that's an interesting thing. If we want to go more toward the future, what's going to happen later on? Is it going to be something completely different, or is it going to be just splintered? See, that's what I'm not too sure. Is it going to be a variety of different things? Is it going to be just
all of them following the same path?
Yeah, no, because I don't think it's going to be all of them following the same path.
No,
but I think the Canadian market's quite different from like internationally. Like some places have had escape rooms for 8 years or more, right?
Like Japan.
Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, do we think that, or I don't know. Like, I know that tech is a huge factor in escape rooms, and that it's going to affect, you know, like the generations of escape rooms and stuff. But I'm thinking, is it only the tech that will do it? Are the themes going to change? Are the puzzle designs going to change? I don't know.
Well, I don't think the themes are going to change. You're still going to have a variety. I mean, because it touches on almost 100 themes now.
Right.
So. Whether or not, you know, are we ever going to have another prison one? Yeah, there are going to be many prison-themed rooms. Or serial killer? Yes, those will still be around, if you ask me.
Yeah, there's just such a heavy focus on tech. And
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of possibilities with tech. And one of the things going around is tech managing the groups that are in there. So handling the hint systems, recording, and finding out how far along the players are actually in the room so the game masters can be open to do other things. And I think that's one of the directions that tech is actually headed in for the next generation.
Automation?
Automation. Making it automatic.
Process.
Making it reset itself. That's another thing that a lot of people are looking into as well, because they want to push as many groups through, and this is like a business decision, right? Because at the end of the day, more throughput, more money.
And furthermore, you also want to make it easy to maintain. It needs to be easy to upkeep, because if you're spending more and more money on maintaining tech that constantly breaks, you don't want to do that as well. So it has to be a good business decision, as Mike has said.
And like David and Harold just said, if you can't fix it, don't buy it. Don't go to Taobao and buy crap.
Yeah.
No. Tell us how you really
No, when Edwin gets on here from lockroom.ca, he loves talking about making sure you get high-quality stuff, because all the low-quality stuff will break within a week or a month.
It's not only that. I've talked with Edwin quite a bit, and he's all about redundancy as well. When he was using, I don't know if he still uses directional locks, he had this huge box full of just directional locks to replace in case something broke, so that'll be an interesting talk.
It's interesting now because a lot of escape room owners are realizing directional locks are the worst locks to get because they break the most easily.
They get stuck.
They just get broken. It no longer works anymore. And then you have to go through so many of them. And they're not cheap. They weren't meant to be open, like, you know, because
50 times a day.
Yes. And especially if we're not too sure on what that combination is, then we just try everything. Chick, 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 and then you go reset, reset. And then you just keep doing that over and over and over again. Even when we knew the combination, how many times have we reset that lock? Bang, bang. Oh, yeah, and then if they have it in a really hard place to reset it, so you can't get your finger on top of it, all I do is I just push it against the... bang, bang! Stupid. Why did you do that? It makes so hard.
That's how you really feel, So do you think because we still, the enthusiasts still need our room fix and that we are, like, say you just want to do a cheap room one night, do you think the Generation 1 rooms will eventually fade out, or do you think there's always going to be a market for them?
I think for newbies, Generation 1 rooms aren't so bad. Just like when we first experienced it, it was amazing, right? It was kind of like, you know, like you said, a flash game where you're just randomly clicking things, so you randomly touch everything.
Right.
And try to open it all.
Yeah.
Right?
And if it stays around... $10 to $15.
People are more willing to.
People will probably go to them, right?
Yeah.
And so they'll go, "Oh, look, this is much cheaper than $25. Let's try that." And so they'll go to it. They'll find that it's lots of fun, and then they'll try. Let's try one of the more expensive ones, and go, "Whoa, what's happening?"
Yeah, I think there's definitely still room for Generation 1 rooms until the Generation 2 places start saying, "Hey, guys, let's start charging everything." Well,
lower.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's one of the things that owners are actually discussing now.
Mm-hmm.
Because tech is, I guess, becoming more a mainstay and more people are going to these places, they're saying, okay, so now let's see how we can lower the price. If, again, it's going back to throughput and still providing a good experience as well.
But I don't know if that's going to change, at least in, say, downtown Toronto, because of the rent that people would have to pay. Yeah. I mean, I could see it maybe in, the suburban areas where the rent might not be as high, but at least in the downtown core. Mm-hmm. I've gone to Gen 1 rooms, which are, $25 to $30, and it has to be like that because they're in the downtown core, on prime real estate.
But I mean, if you're looking at, say a supermarket, TNT, they're pricing at the downtown locations more than the ones in the uptown location, but people still go because it's the market that you have that are downtown.
Right. And it's more convenient too.
Background for anybody who doesn't know what TNT is, it's an Asian supermarket.
It's a magical place.
It's owned by Loblaws. It's not that Asian.
It's magical to me.
Does it have goat's heads?
No, I don't think so. We went to a store the other day that had it.
Yeah. A lamb's head. It was great.
Carol took a picture.
And sent it to Man Pants.
Yeah.
She didn't like it.
What do you mean?
You went, ew!
No, I was there at the counter,
too. But I also wanted you to remember.
I know. You took a really... I don't know what filter you put on that, because suddenly all of the bloody colors were just that much more vibrant, and the tongue that was sticking out was, lovely and pink, and
sounds
it was like
Errol's
black
pulling
and white
it out now.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'll show you. The skinned lamb head.
Aww. We'll relate this back to Gen 1 and Gen 2 rooms, too.
So I can imagine the tech becoming more and more automated. That's more... for the owners than it is for our players. Because for us, if you think about it, if a door magically opens by tech, or if a door opens because somebody's behind there pulling it, it's still the same experience for us.
Yes, true. Mm-hmm. I think we went to a couple where actors were triggering things that were happening, but in our eyes, it could have been tech too, but afterwards
Mm-hmm.
But it's still just as cool to see something happened before your eyes, seemingly automatically. Should we
Mike's
move on?
Looking off, thinking, "No, it's not, Amanda. I'd rather have tech."
No, I'm just trying to think of other ways that tech can help. I guess beyond the Generation 2 point, I guess it's really going into the realm of replayability and changing how the game happens over time. But yeah, it's just something I'm playing in my head. Okay. Yeah.
The replayability part of an escape room, once again, which still hasn't truly been found, is something that might be the Generation 3 or even the Generation 4.
Right, or it seems to be the holy grail for owners now to find that replayability factor. Are there things other than, I think we sort of discussed them, but are there things, the things other than tech that make a Gen 2 room, like puzzle design, for instance? Did we discuss that already, or was it... just sort of.
It's more so that I think if the puzzle designs make sense. Because sometimes, I think, sometimes in the Gen 1 room, and maybe it's because it was first starting off, the puzzles were just there to just open up a lock for no reason other than the fact that you need to open up this lock. And then when you're going to Gen 2, then it's slowly, and not 100%, it's slowly starting to become part of the story and the immersion of the room. So, for example, if you were in an Egyptian temple, then you might think, oh, if I place this
vase
here, it might open up a secret door. And you've seen that happen many times in movies, and that's not true. But, you know, that's what you understand will happen in these kind of adventure movies, and that's cool. And that all makes sense within the narrative of the room.
P.S. If anybody has a room that a boulder chases you after you put the vase in, let us know.
We'll
so I just avoid it?
No.
Roomescapedivas@gmail.com. Let us know.
I don't want to run a boulder.
No, you can be at the back.
I will get hit. You're going to, like, trip me on the way out. And
hope they get that on camera.
Indiana Jones.
Maybe we should start an Errol's a Jerk Facebook group. You'll probably join it anyway.
Oh, I would.
Be like, yeah, I am.
I'm not denying any of this. The only way I can think you can do a replayable room is if you compare it to board games. There are there's board games that are constantly replayable, and then you have things like your murder mystery board game box.
Which is definitely not replayable.
You can only do it once, and you give it to someone else. So the only way I can see that happening, other than people just trying to best their score, that's another type of room where they actually have a score attached to it, and the more things you solve or do, the better your score it will be.
Yeah, so if you're really competitive, that's an attraction. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there is one escape room that is actually probably three escape rooms that we've done that have that kind of scoring system in place where it encourages you to play again to reach the higher score. And one which the Room Escape Divas have a record for.
It's true.
We won a prize.
So the first time you do it, you might, like, bumble your way through and, like, you know, get a very poor score. And then second time through, you'd be like, yes, I know where everything is now and what not to knock over and that sort of thing.
Now, to be fair about us getting a record on that room, you know, it's not really a big thing to get a record if it's been open for a week.
Yeah. That's true. It's probably gone now.
I do have one replayability thing I wanted to bring up, which, because I thought about if you played the board game Betrayal at House on the Hill, which is replayable in that there's different scenarios that play out in the game, depending, like, halfway through the game, somebody's declared the traitor, and then one of 50 different things could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes, and you're also building a haunted house, now that obviously an escape room isn't that, but I'm just wondering if, like, you know, if escape rooms might go that route, like a replayability thing, I know it's extremely expensive is the problem, to have different scenarios play out, like, narratively.
Well, it doesn't even have to be different scenarios, because there are probably a bunch of board games that you could probably make into an escape room, and then you can have that replayability aspect of it.
Ooh, like what?
Like Monopoly?
Oh, yeah, like Monopoly.
The escape room. Boring escape room.
No, but I mean, for example, you know, if you wanted to do the whole Space Alert / Artemis thing, you could. Really, because it just has to be the players against a system, and then they have to be able to win, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what that system is. In your case, it's Betrayal on Haunted Hill. If you really want, you could do, what, Arabian Nights, for that matter. Now, it'd also be hard, but again, it's
that
just like, no, I mean, you just do something and then random events happen and then you just keep on going. But that way it becomes less puzzle-based. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Betrayal on Haunted Hill is not, there's no puzzles in there. It's just you trying to beat the system by overcoming the obstacles that the system puts up.
Yeah.
Yes. So there aren't any puzzles for you to solve. That's the hard thing that makes it non-replayable is the fact that you have to solve a puzzle. And once you know how to solve that puzzle, then
the only thing that could make it replayable is if you can do it faster. So I guess we can move on then.
To trends.
And what is the future of escape rooms? Are they here to stick around, or are they like the, you know, bowling roller? What was it? Roller rinks? Roller skating rinks. What other fads have there been that have died out?
But they didn't die out. All those fads are all still around.
Well, roller rinks are very like next to none. There's only like two in vicinity of
that Ontario. Hipsters probably go to.
No, they're actually kids. There's lots of kids that go to.
Oh, really?
They have lights and stuff on their little wheels, and it gets really cool. Yeah.
So there are still bowling alleys. There are still laser tag arenas. There are still all these things. It's just that it will fall to a niche group, which might be people like us. The only trouble with us is that we can only do their rooms once.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Laser tag people.
They can go as many times.
They can go as many times. Yes. And if you think about it, all those activities, all those events, like laser tag is great for a birthday party. Mm-hmm, Archer tag is great for a birthday party. Yeah. Bowling is great for a birthday party if you like balls and things.
Okay.
Emphasis on balls.
But all those things are great because you can repeat it, and then you can keep doing it and have a grand old time, and it's great for a birthday party. But it's not so great for an escape room, because an escape room, unless you have an exact number of 12, otherwise you might, for example, if you did something like real escape games, and you have to have 12 people there. It's like, so you can have 10 people and then two random people at your birthday party. That's not as fun, right? If you think about it. No. So that's the hard thing about escape rooms, is because you can only do it once. And you have a set number of people. What if you want more people at your birthday party? Like, for example, archery tag. You could have tons of people there.
Yep.
Right? You can invite as many people as you want. Now, yes, you will have randoms there, but at the same sort of time, you don't have to count on them. Yes, they have to be shot at, but it's not as vital as in an escape room.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing about laser tag, for example, if you've read, I linked a bunch of these things in our Slack enthusiast chat, and I found out that they have a lot of market research on the demographics of a laser tag arena, and it's mostly 15 to 20, 25, 30-year-old boys, 30-year-old boys, it's all the same, and that's their demographic, and that's whom they target to, right? But escape rooms, you don't really want young people in there. I mean, yes, it's great if you want the money, but at the same time, they'll probably go in there and be completely lost. Well, not really.
They'll just be teenagers and destroy everything.
Yeah. That's just our impression of teenage boys, but
just teenagers.
And so it's not, laser tag isn't a good thing to compare it to, because it can't, not degenerate, it can't fall back on, the core of laser tag is different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The core of bowling is different, even, right? Who are the people that it falls back on to be their target demographic? So who's the target demographic for escape rooms? The really cool thing about escape rooms is the target demographic seems to be equally split between females and males. Not that laser tag couldn't be, but right now it's just mostly 15 to 30-year-old boys. So
really?
Same sort of thing, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I looked it up.
I was like,
shoot things more than girls do.
Yeah, same. And paintball, older generation, but once again, still the marketing says that paintball is more towards this section of males. I can't remember the age. That's between 20 to 30.
Well, I admit, I would imagine that not only is it genders that are more equal in escape rooms, but also age ranges as well. Like, you could have teenagers, or 30 to 40, or 40 to 50. There seems to be a wide variety of people playing them.
Yeah, I find even, I thought about this a while ago with my group of friends, the people that I typically go to escape rooms with are the people who I actually play board games with, people who do puzzles on a regular basis, and even people who don't, but traditionally people who like puzzles more. And one of the things that I think in the future is that, and we've discussed this before, is that escape rooms will probably have to have less puzzle-oriented rooms and more task-oriented rooms to have a wider appeal to different people.
It's true. It has to be easier and has to be doable by more people within the room. If it's only one or two people solving things in the room, then it's not really that fun for everybody else in the room. It's great for an enthusiast group to go in there because we are all going to do what we can to solve the room because this is what we like.
And we go less now, as you said, for, you know, let's see if we can beat that time or get out in an hour. And we go more for let's have a great experience.
So there are things like adventure rooms, Five Wits, for example. Even though I've never done it, everybody just keeps talking about it.
We
want to go. We do want to go, and we will. And it sounds great, and it's in an adventure room where you have a set amount of time to try to solve something, normally task-based, so that everybody can do it, and then you go on to the next room, and then they just shuffle people through there. I would hope that's not the future of escape rooms, not because there's anything wrong with Five Wits, but it is fun to spend an hour in a room trying to solve it with a team, and to be challenged by that, as opposed to see how quick it is for us to, you know, finish a Towers of Hanoi puzzle.
Surprisingly, there's one escape room, and I know you've been to it, Errol. Actually, we've all been to it. Escape Maze in Peterborough. They have a room called The Shaft, which kind of borrows concepts from A Haunt and an escape room where you're solving puzzles still, but you have a set amount of time, whether you solve it or not, before it moves you on to the next stage. Mm-hmm. And I think really that we're going to see more and more escape rooms doing this. Again, it's going back to throughput and the business of things. If you have one group finishing the first room in 15 minutes and they're on the second room, you can stick in another group in the first room.
Zoe cracked me up, actually, because I think I told you this story. I was talking with her beforehand because you were saying we're going to do the shaft and it's a scary. It was a little bit scary. And obviously we knew that Echo would be scared, but Zoe always tries to put on a braver face. And I'd never actually heard a kid try and convince me of this because she was like, so how scary is the shaft? Is it, like, actually scary? Like, really scary? And then I looked at her like, yeah. And she's like, I'm just asking for Echo because I'm worried about her. It was like,
smooth, Zoe, smooth.
Personally, I would like to see escape rooms employ the whole immersive aspect of, like, actors and murder mystery things.
I would love that.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I also know that's not really financially
fiscally
viable because, you know, what's easier, paying a bunch of actors or spending an awful lot of money on set and then hoping that the decor stays around for a while? Whereas actors, you just got to keep paying them.
You do have to keep paying them. They're annoying that way.
Yeah. But I want to do those once more.
Well, in general, I would like to see, like, story and escape rooms rise up more. It seems to be doing well in LA, I think, which makes sense because it's Hollywood, and so of course you're going to get people who are going to try and do more writing in there.
And actors are abundant.
Actors are like, can I just? What did Christine say? She said,
"You throw out a
street, yeah,
you throw a script down out the street, and actors will come flocking to it, like seagulls."
I think there is definitely room for Generation 1, Generation 2 rooms, depending where they are. I mean, as long as the company knows how to market, how to maintain and mature, or I guess evolve in some sort of way over time. Because, I mean, I use Escape Maze as an example because they're not so much the norm as compared to a lot of other places. They have a single escape in the town of Peterborough, which is also a university town, but after speaking with the owner, Jake, she was telling me that the majority of her players are actually people who are 40 to 60 years old, female players, who keep coming back. And
see, the demographic is amazing. A lot of people, it can fit a large demographic, which is great about escape rooms. Mm. I will also take my family, and they're young kids.
So in their case, because they're a single escape town, and they have to recycle their rooms, so they'll get rid of an older room and build a new one. The good thing is that they have a great build team. They actually have their entire family living on the farm where the barn is, where the escape room is, and they flip a room every 3 to 6 months. So they always have a fresh new room for these players who keep coming back. One of the things that they're probably, and I don't know if they are, tapping into is the student body there. Because if you think about university towns, every year you have a new set of people coming in.
And I've never seen the rooms.
Exactly. So, yeah, just little things owners are probably thinking about or already doing.
I guess a couple of the bigger risks is, one, that the market will stagnate. I don't think that's going to happen. I think people will figure out new ways to evolve the rooms and new ways to play them and refine them. But the other thing that Scott Nicholson touched on and Errol was talking about as well is the fact that the market is getting oversaturated with rooms right now, and how many rooms are too many rooms before, you know, you see the smaller places either shut down or maybe the, I don't know, I don't think the whole thing will crash or anything, but...
Nope.
No, definitely not. I don't think so.
It's like Krispy Kreme.
That's true.
Right?
Krispy Kreme pretty much crashed, though. They only have one location left.
But they only have, but it's, they're not, they didn't die.
No, they didn't die out, right?
So, but it's, they opened up too fast. All of a sudden, there are Krispy Kremes everywhere. And then all of a sudden, they thought, wait a minute.
There's only one type of donut?
Yeah.
No, they did have other types, and they were really good. They were just a bit more expensive.
I've never been to one.
Oh, so, yeah. They had a key lime one that was good. Ooh. Sorry.
This is Ruby's expertise is food, you know, and baked goods.
Tune into episode 11 where we talk about food.
No.
But do you think all of these smaller places are going to get choked out by these really high-tech places? As you said, sometimes people just like a cheap experience and they want to only pay $15 and they don't want to pay $30 even if it's a high-tech room for their first time.
Well, I think it's dependent on the market where you are. Right now in Toronto, there are so many people, there are a ton of rooms. And so maybe if the room isn't good, it will die out. I think bad rooms will die out. For example, somebody will say to me, hey, this should we do this room that's listed in that blog TO article? And I won't say which room it is. Like my cousin just texted me and I said, no, that room sucks. Don't go anywhere near it. And if that keeps on happening, if we keep telling people, and more people find out that a certain room sucks, then eventually that one will die out, I would hope, sort of thing. But all the good ones, all the ones that are fine to do, I think they'll be fine. Because once you do an escape room, you might want to do more. And so one company can't do it all.
Yeah, it's like players, like new players get educated, they're... And more experienced venues start to lower their prices. I think that's when we're going to start seeing some of the not-so-good places not doing as well and starting to disappear.
If they lower the prices.
I think it's only a matter of time before people start saying, okay, maybe not all these places are worth the $30 an hour or something, but yeah, it's just a matter of time before they show their fangs or whatever.
Well, I mean, like the quality places, a lot of them slowly in time, as long as they know that they have a consistent amount of customers, they actually do lower their prices because they realize, hey, we're sustainable. We don't need to charge this much to, you know, pay back everything that we've gotten a loan for. We're good now. We're okay. So let's, you know, have more customers come in by lowering the prices to a more reasonable or a lower price market.
If anything that I did find, for if any owners are listening, and I know we're really hard on owners, but if any owners are listening, if you are planning on starting one, you should do a facility that has more than one room.
Yes.
Because if anybody is struggling, it's usually a facility that has only one room.
Yeah.
Unless you disagree, Michael, because you're the one that has the most experience on this.
No, I completely agree. I mean, usually the ones with the one room are asking the people's more than one room are, you know, how do you find running a multi-room? There is more staff, there is a lot more preparation and planning into it, but in general, people are always asking after they've had a great time at the room, where can I do more, or when are you going to come up with another one?
And you won't really get rid of the first room because there's so many people that haven't done it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There are many rooms that have owners that have said, I've been wanting to retire this room, but there are so many people that it's still super popular, and I don't know why. It's like one of my first ones, and it's because there are still a lot of people that haven't done rooms. And so I don't know if the market is saturated. The market actually may be saturated, but it's still not mainstream enough that everybody knows what it is.
I guess it is difficult to say right now, because as Errol said earlier on, there's so little study out there about escape rooms yet. So we don't know, like, different parts of the world, for instance, the story might be completely different.
Well, Japan, I guess you could take a look at Japan and see how they're doing. You know what would be interesting? Sorry, I'm interrupting my whole Japan talk. by the fact that...
This is a new thing, you're interrupting yourself.
Yeah, I know. No, actually, that's not new. I do that all the time. It is interesting because Scrap Entertainment is still going strong in the States, it seems, but it isn't going as strong here in Canada.
The one thing that Scrap's doing that I find is very interesting is that they're integrating a lot of their culture into their games. For example, there's one Scrap mass player game that's based off Attack on Titan. Mm-hmm. And another one that I saw that was based off One Piece. I'm a big fan of One Piece.
Oh, so did when they I do saw a One Piece one?
They
oh,
did. No, and I oh, was dying God. To play it until I did Escape from the Bank. And then
and then you got scared?
Yeah. I'm like, you don't want to
Escape the Bank. We're really hard on it.
Yeah.
You know, there's always going to be owners who can't afford all of the fancy tech. And I guess they just have to learn how to make up for it in other ways. Like, you know... upping the immersion through the narrative or through characters, how to make a cool experience. Like Escape from the Six, for instance, is a good example of, you know, utilizing a lot of... Oh, never mind. Forget Escape from the Six. Like Mike, I don't know where I was going with this. Okay.
I can think of a couple of rooms that were more immersion-heavy, not so much or any tech, but they were really great rooms. Rooms that I actually recommend to people, even though they're small town rooms, but that are great.
But that's just it, too. You know, if you think about what Scott says and how we likes to stress, it's not about the tech. It's not even about the puzzles. It's about how immersed you are in that room. How much
in that world.
In that world. If that experience is going to be amazing, experiential experience... I'm being redundant.
Experiential experiences by Errol.
In other words, what I think is that if you go from being a player to being part of the story, that's the sweet spot. That's really what, anyway, I want to experience in a room. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to have tech. I just want to be in that story. It
doesn't even have to be a super fleshed out story. If we could just feel that we're part of some narrative and
that
we are
moving it along.
And we're part of some fantasy-related character, and you put man pants in Wolverine's arms, then she'd be happy.
I would be.
There you go.
I'm not gonna lie. If it was like, oh man, now I'm going to that place. Forget it.
Well, I mean, like, for instance, I remember the first laser room we ever had to do, and we knew there were lasers. I was literally picturing the whole entrapment thing where, you know, it's really hard, you really have to duck and stuff. But when it became a super easy laser situation where you can just crawl right under everything without needing any sort of flexibility or trying to move in any other way, it was just, it was a very big letdown, right?
I don't know, I'm not let down by... My super easy things where my big butt doesn't get in the way. I know what you mean, though. It's like... It's a more satisfying feeling to feel like you've really conquered something and you're like the first one to do it. Then you feel like you're, I don't know, what's a movie where lots of people crawl through lasers? Like a James Bond type of thing or...
I think puzzles that are somehow part of the environment helps also with immersion.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And that doesn't even have to involve tech. For example, we were asked to help out with a school. And I won't go any further than that because I don't want to give up any spoilers. And as we were touring through the building, there was just so many things I wanted to ask. Do you have access to this phone?
Oh.
The phone?
Oh.
Yeah, do you have access to that phone? If you know, what would happen if they're running through a thing and all of a sudden a phone call comes? Do you have access? I've never thought to ask. Oh, if you can find out if you have access to that phone, that'd be awesome, right? Because I think they were looking to do puzzles and just putting paper on the wall that you might, you know, decide to solve and stuff like that.
It's like,
and
but if you could, you have a whole school as
you
the
have
environment.
A whole environment, and if you place them in a school and you can use that environment so you don't have to pretend you're outside somewhere else.
Side note, if you want to see a great show, bring Errol to a humongous building and tell him that you'd like him to think about puzzle ideas, because it is so much fun to watch him, like, you know, suddenly just start off running through the building, picking up picture, like, you know, grabbing pictures, being like, huh, can you use this? Can I make a picture like this? What about this? Hey, can we get, you know, are there trap doors here? Or, like, you know, just, the questions get a little slightly more ridiculous with each go, and then you can see, it's great to see,
do I have access to the roof?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was one of the questions. You're like, oh, no, that was great. There was, like, a stairwell with probably 20 pieces of caution tape in front of it. And everyone's like, what is that? They're like, oh, it's nothing. It goes nowhere. But is it really out of bounds? Or is it just like you just don't want students to go in there? Can people go there and stuff? Where's that go? The roof. Can we? No. By that point, it was like... but they were getting excited. Like, it was great to see other people. But it's just fun because we got into another room and I turn around like, where did Errol go? I don't know. He's probably running off somewhere, like, feeling a wall or...
Because the best place to put a puzzle is in the ordinary. And so I always look around to see how you can make a puzzle out of things that are already there. Mm-hmm. And then that they have to discover and do. And if it's all immersed within the environment so that you didn't have to make a fake prop because it's part of the environment. Now, escape room owners can't do that, obviously.
Yeah.
Because they are building... Actually, they can do all sorts of fun things even more so. But if you already have a place like this building... And I'm not making any sense, but still, it's a lot of fun trying to build something.
It's another way of saying using your natural environment, knowing what your building has to offer, mm-hmm. and using and integrating that is sometimes a much easier way to get your puzzles and puzzle design than it is to bring in huge amounts of different tech or effects to try and convey something that's not actually there. Like, especially for owners who maybe don't have as big a budget to, like, transform their space. Mm-hmm. You know, look at what you have. Look how you can use the building to your advantage.
Although, unless it's an office, we've escaped from many offices.
So many offices.
But it can still be done.
They weren't really offices, though.
There never are they? No. I mean, it's going to be so bad that if I go into a doctor's office sometime, I'm just going to be like... You know, looking behind his bookshelves and knocking it over. What are you doing? There's no trap door behind here. You're not holding ears in jars. Sad.
You're taking apart the skeleton in the room.
Like, oh, no.
Where do you keep your diary? What?
That anatomy chart has numbers on it. It's important.
Yeah. Anyway, so to wrap it up, I guess, you know, I think there is a future for escape rooms. Like you said.
Oh, yeah, there's a future. We'll keep playing them.
Yeah, we'll keep playing them so long as they exist. But where they go still is going to be a little bit of a mystery. Unless somebody knows otherwise,
I mean,
please tell us.
tons of things that people are trying.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether it be VR, whether it be projection mapping, whether it be even just simple things. Like, you know, escaping from dog cages.
What? Remember?
A kennel.
Oh, that was a dog cage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Like a dog kennel type of thing. There's some big dogs.
That was really big.
But the interesting thing is, are we currently in the golden age of escape rooms where almost anything can happen and people are doing all sorts of things? Because soon, you know, we won't be able to be handcuffed anymore.
That's true. Right? In southwestern Ontario, people are cracking down on, as they should be, really.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying that you shouldn't.
Fire codes are important.
Yeah. And safety is very important.
Yeah.
And then begins the rise of underground escape rooms. Yes. Where handcuffs and trap doors are abundant.
Yes. Yeah.
Because even then, even some secret rooms are... Not allowed.
Yeah,
not to code.
Right.
So they might not allow as many secret rooms, which would be sad because, you know, it was fun being handcuffed. It's for me, the first time I was handcuffed, I thought that was awesome. Yeah. And even afterwards, I thought it was still okay. I thought it was fun.
It's like, I think it's fun when it makes sense. Sometimes you're going to be handcuffed first. I'm like, why?
If you're going to handcuff me in Egypt, that doesn't make any sense.
Or like when you're handcuffed and you find the key within the first 30 seconds in the room. I'm like, well, there really wasn't much point in that, was there? Anyway.
Or if you get handcuffed by cuffs that are too big to even go on your hands.
Or too small. Or they're like, or you have somebody do it up for you, and it's like, my wrist is small, but it's not that small.
And I still like trying to fish keys to get out of a prison.
That's cool, yeah, actually.
That's still fun, yeah. You know? If escape rooms eventually change, and I don't think it will, but if it eventually changes to make them simpler so that it's more mainstream, that would be sad for enthusiasts, because now we don't have difficult rooms to do. Not that we have very many difficult rooms to do now, but, mm-hmm. you know, there isn't a room that our crack team could go to and us have a hard time with it. Now, it would be hard if it's just me and going in there with my kids. Actually, not my kids.
No, your kids would help.
Are pretty good.
If it was just you in a room, you'd be like, oh, who's going to search Beth? Oh, God, it's a diary. Oh, no. Errol's kryptonite.
Stupid diaries, even in video games.
No, not even. Oh, no, wait. Diaries in video games, yeah. So yeah. Errol got Tomb Raider. And so I was just watching him play it, and I'm used to watching Errol play games now, but I've given up on even trying to read the diary entries, because he'll find, like, a document, and it'll pop up on screen, and Errol will look at it for about 5 seconds, maybe, and then just be like, all right, bored now, and because... You know, there's no physical copy of it. We're not in an escape room. I can't read it. So I'm missing out on all sorts of stories. Like, it was about, I don't know, this guy was killed, but he wasn't, I guess. Okay, moving on. And I'm like, wait, what does that mean? But then Errol, who hates searching in escape rooms, suddenly has all the time in the world to scour an area in Tomb Raider for all of the little extra things. And what do these extra things amount to?
I'm a completionist,
I almost exploded at the end. I held it in.
Why?
Because there were these things you were shooting, and I thought, like, the treasures are cool, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you're finding coin caches. It's like, what does it get? It's like these trading cards, which you can redeem at some Tomb Raider online thing, probably.
I have no idea what they're for.
I don't know.
I'm just trying to complete the challenge, so it's done.
Oh, my God. It was like, you know, you shoot something. You found one of seven of these. Oh, let's find all seven.
Yeah, and you then get experience points.
Where is this thoroughness in the escape rooms?
Do you get experience points in the escape room?
Okay, no. Owners, you would like your research. Give it an experience point system.
Oh.
And let us know at roomescapedemons@gmail.com.
Right, so we'd love to hear your comments on this as well.
We couldn't cover... We only had an hour.
Yeah.
There's
no
way we could cover... I wanted to talk about a whole whack of other things. And then we all started talking about Amanda's love life that we edited out. It's awful.
Yep, it is awful, isn't it?
Just another week with the divas.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to do, because I think one of the topics we wanted to discuss was, like, hilarious... experiences that we've had, or was that it? And I think it'd be a good idea to sort of, if people have stories of their own that they would like shared, they can email us.
And we'll read it.
And we'll read it out, and you can tell us if you
want. We'll act it out if you make it into a script.
Uh-huh. If you want it to be anonymous.
If it's a love story, it'd be funny.
Okay, Errol! If you want it to be anonymous, by all means, like, you tell us, like, tell the story, but don't say my name. If you'd like us to pronounce your name to the heavens, then we'll do that too. But yeah, we'd love to hear your experiences, and we'd love to share them and share our own stories as well. Room Escape Divas is hosted by Inverse Genius. You can go to InverseGenius.com to find all sorts of... Mike, you are whispering. Fuck off!
He doesn't even have alcohol.
What are you whispering? Like, it's gonna pick it up, Mike! The mic is picking up Mike!
You can't edit that. You can put a boop in.
Room Escape Divas is hosted by Inverse Genius. You can go to InverseGenius.com to find all sorts of other fun podcasts and geeky materials like this one. Sorry. Material. You can also go to Shut up. You can also find us on Facebook. Just join the Room Escape Divas Facebook page. Or you can email us at roomescapedivas@gmail.com. If you use Twitter, you can use the hashtag REDivas.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye-bye!